When it comes to, for example, your career as a fire chief, what do you enjoy most rewarding about your job?
Cool. Probably what's most rewarding for me is helping our firefighters achieve their successes.
And what are some of the successes your firefighters have actually had?
Well, in addition to the day-to-day provision of services directly to the citizens, there's some specific programs that we're most proud of here in Windsor. One of them, for example, is our Wake Up Windsor Get a Working Smoke Alarm program.
Oh, that is great. I wanted to ask you about that here. I heard that, I really like the idea that you had about the five-year plan for ensuring every home has a working smoke alarm.
Right.
How has the community responded to that? Because that's an awesome program. I wish we had that in Kitchener.
Yeah, they've responded very, very well. Certainly, when we started the program, frankly, the rate of non-compliance with having working smoke alarms on every level of your home was not very good at all. It was pretty much double the provincial average. And so, that was quite alarming to us. So we needed to look at a different way of delivering a public fire safety education message and deal with the most vulnerable in our community as a priority. And so we reached out to several community partners to help fund this initiative. As you know, municipalities across the province have been struggling with their fiscal position, and certainly Windsor was one of the most hard-hit communities in the last 10 years. So we needed to not only put the program together in a different manner in terms of delivery, but we also had to look at funding it in a different way.
Absolutely, absolutely. Now, I heard that you gave one free smoke alarm for every story of the house, and then the rest you gave coupons. Now, where were these coupons used for? Was it just used for like one store, like the Home Depot, or could residents purchase it from any store?
Right. So the partner that we utilized at the beginning of this program provided coupons for us to provide to residents that could be used anywhere that they sell their product. So they weren't limited to a particular store, but rather any retailer that sold their product. So it's been, it's ongoing. We're not done yet. We have visited thus far about 20,000 homes. And we have, still have quite a number to go yet, but we do it in a blitz format, so we're not out there every day of the year, but we run a blitz program for 6 weeks in the spring and another blitz for 6 weeks in the fall, and target up until now the most vulnerable in the community, and then as we get those parts of the city finished, then we'll expand into every part of the city.
That's a great program. Now, I mean, as a fire chief, I mean, this is remarkable. What you could have done is you could have fined all these people $235, but instead you decide to go to every house, to every single house that you can, to give a working smoke alarm, which is incredible.
Well, again, we needed to look at what we were doing and what we have done in the last 20 years, which is pretty much the same as every other fire service, in trying to encourage compliance and tell everyone all of the good reasons why they should be compliant in terms of early warning to be able to get out and stay out should a fire occur in their home. But frankly, that approach wasn't working very well. So we need to look at a different way to do it.
And another question I had was that I know a lot of people rent their homes now, and I've actually heard that it's the landlord's responsibility to make sure that the smoke alarms work, but on the same token, it's the tenant's responsibility to let the landlord know if the smoke alarm does not function.
Yeah, it's a shared responsibility. Of course, the owner is always responsible for being in compliance with the regulations, but in the case of rental properties, there's a shared obligation both on the part of the owner but also on the part of the tenant, those who lease from the owners of these buildings, to do their part in making sure that the landlord or the owner is aware of any non-compliance issues.
Absolutely. Now, is it absolutely necessary to change the battery every time in the daylight savings time, or is it or only if the battery goes out?
Well, we encourage that the batteries are replaced at least once a year, and both with daylight savings time and standard Eastern time changes twice a year. That's two opportunities for us to remind people to do that.
Absolutely, absolutely. Now I'm going to shift to a different topic here. I heard that you you're also a big advocate of hiring people with disabilities. Now, now in this case here, when you hired Bradley, what were the best qualities you found in Bradley?
Well, I mean, Bradley has several disabilities, but not unlike most individuals who have a disability, we chose to focus rather on his abilities rather than his disabilities, and that's something that we're encouraging all employers to take a different look at how you can gainfully employ anyone with a disability. I mean, Bradley is like all people with disabilities. They're an opportunity to provide a better bottom line for business, whether it's the public service like us here in the fire service or whether it's private enterprise. Typically, those people with disabilities are more efficient, they're more loyal than their non-disabled counterparts. Absenteeism is less, turnover is less, their safety statistics are greatly improved. And when you look at that versus the cost of accommodating these workers with whether it's new technology or education, whatever it is that they need to receive in order to be an active part of the workplace, those costs are very, very minimal. And so, you know, we've looked at that. We have very much enjoyed Bradley's involvement in our organization, and his contributions are not only exemplary, but they're a great example that can be provided to show others how they might involve these types of individuals with some challenges.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. You know, I have ADD and ADHD myself. I used to live in Windsor myself.
Okay.
I lived in Windsor from August 2011 until April 4, 2013 when I moved to London. But now I'm living in Kitchener. I've been living in Kitchener since June 2014. Anyhow, I was going to say that based on what I've gone through, like when I lived in Windsor, and elsewhere, I should say, with me having ADD and ADHD, like for me, is I don't know when to be quiet half the time. I love to talk.
Yeah, well, certainly I think our program here and Bradley very specifically and many others, in fact, recently in the city, our Parks and Recreation Department has brought in several of Bradley's counterparts into their workplace. And I think that all of them together have shown that, you know, people with disabilities can work alongside people without disabilities. And in the case of Bradley and others that are here with the city of Windsor, you really can't tell who is disabled and who isn't. You know, I think what we need to do is look at the business trends and more importantly, probably the societal changes that are required in terms of attitude and start, like I said earlier, focusing on people's abilities rather than their disabilities. You know, there are so many good reasons to do it, but it's not about charity. It's not about, you know, old approaches or old considerations in the past was, well, it's the right thing to do and it's a nice thing to do. It is the right thing to do. It is a nice thing to do. But you can actually make it worthwhile from a business perspective. And I think you might find that these individuals with these challenges might just be better than what employers traditionally have thought in the past.
Absolutely, and I think also, it's great for a business perspective, but I also think that it's also the law too. And the other thing I was going to mention here is when it comes to like people who who let's say, for example, have got so many abilities, but it's just sometimes some people, what they need is they just need some extra assistance, extra guidance, and extra encouragement.
Absolutely, it is. And you know, here, I'll be honest, when Bradley first came to us, and, you know, certainly in the weeks leading up to when he first started, I was a little bit worried, just like any other employer might be. You know, how is he going to be accepted? You know, what about the 10%ers? And every organization has those 10%ers who sometimes cause us some grief and take a lot of our attention. And, you know, I was a little bit apprehensive of how this was going to go over. But in fact, the exact opposite of what I anticipated in terms of some of the challenges occurred. My 10%ers are the ones that protect Bradley. They're the ones that make sure that Bradley's looked after on a daily basis. And it's actually made them more productive. And those people who, you know, I affectionately refer to as our 10%ers actually aren't our 10%ers anymore. They're the ones who are working very well with Bradley in the workplace that include him on a regular basis and have shown us exactly how productive Bradley and they can be.
Now, what about the community as well? Like, I know that it's great that those that you mentioned, those 10%ers are doing everything they can to protect Bradley and almost all of the fire service as well. Now, the question that I had as well is, how does the community respond to him as well? Do they actually shake his hand, or do they actually include him and stuff like that? Like after he's responded to a call, has he gotten invites and stuff to go out?
Yeah, so we don't involve Bradley in emergency response, but Bradley does participate on a regular basis with all of our public education activities. So Bradley is out there in the community, whether it's in a school or at a community event, some of our other PR events, Bradley gets involved just like everyone else. Bradley wears a uniform. It's a little bit different so that they don't misunderstand that he is not a firefighter. But that he is an active part of our team. And they accept Bradley and reach out to Bradley. The interaction with Bradley out on the streets and in the community is exactly the same as it is with all of our other staff.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. Now, what is his role actually as a member of the fire service?
Well, Bradley fulfills all kinds of different roles, but you know, he multitasks just like the rest of the staff. He gets involved in the preparation of the meals with staff. He gets involved with some of the remedial jobs that staff have on a regular basis. For example, our staff have to clean the washrooms. Bradley cleans the washrooms. They have to, you know, wash and shine the floors. Bradley washes and shines the floors. They have to be involved in recycling and cleaning up around the property of each of our fire stations. Bradley does the same thing. Staff have to stock all of our vehicles with the various supplies and do the vehicle inspections. Bradley also participates and does that as well. In the administrative area, he helps us with the disposal of our records, shredding, for example. He does some custodial work and works on make sure that our printers and our photocopiers are in proper working order. He cuts the lawn alongside staff. Our quartermaster, who looks after issuing supplies and uniform items and those kinds of things to staff, he assists her on a daily basis with that sort of stuff. And then at our maintenance shop, it's like our garage, we service our own vehicles here. Bradley works alongside the mechanics and helps them keep the shop clean. He disposes of the used oil when the oil changes are undertaken. He looks after all of the receiving and the packing of items that need to be either shipped or unpacked when we receive them. As a matter of fact, just 3 short weeks after Bradley arrived, Bradley was trained to very carefully dismantle the very delicate parts inside our breathing apparatus. You know, the breathing masks that you see the tanks on the firefighters' backs and the face pieces to protect them from the toxins that are produced at a fire. Very, very important piece of safety equipment. Bradley's involved in the dismantling and the cleaning and for final inspection and certification, and then our trained technicians, of course, do the reassembly to put those units back into service. But Bradley is a very intricate part of a very, very important maintenance task that we have here.
Absolutely, and I have to say that he's basically the bread and butter of the fire service. I have to say that whenever let's say if he's doing all the maintenance of all the vehicles, making sure that the fuel is stocked up and you know, all of the deep compressors of the oxygens are well maintained and everything, that is critical component not only for the people in the fire service but also for the community.
Absolutely,
especially when it comes to response times as well. Now, when it comes to response times, I wanted to ask as well that what is your average response time if someone calls for the fire service? What's the average response time that you go and you attend?
Well, we have a service level that is mandated by bylaw by municipal council, and that requires us to put our first piece of apparatus on scene within 5 minutes of receiving a call for assistance. It requires us, that standard also requires us to have a second responding piece of equipment with four firefighters on it arriving in 9 minutes, and the incident commander and his incident command aide are required to arrive within 12 minutes. So we have a 5, 9, 12 response target, and I can tell you that we certainly meet the 90th percentile pretty much everywhere in the city in that regard.
Absolutely, absolutely. Now, I also just wanted to ask as well, and I know I have a habit of switching from topic to topic. I know my mind works like a flashing light bulb sometimes. So I wanted to ask as well that what can people do to be kind to others? What can people do to be kind to others? So, for example, like, let's say, like, I read a lot of stories on Spotted in Windsor, and people are thanking the fire service for their response. People are thanking Windsor Police. People are thanking stores that have provided excellent customer service, or people that have paid for someone's meal at a restaurant. I've read so much on Spotted in Windsor that it's become more like a community since I've left.
But
so
we encourage our staff to not just the expectations of the citizens we serve, but to exceed those expectations in every way. And so staff achieve that in so many different ways, given the variety of circumstances. Sometimes it's responding to a medical call to assist our partners in EMS, and when they arrive in you know, the beginning of February, they find a couple of seniors that are held up in their home because they haven't been able to shovel themselves out. So our firefighters have been seen on occasion after they deal with the medical issue, actually shoveling the driveway. That's one example of what they do to go beyond what the customer expects. They went in a recent rainstorm. They were out dealing with high winds and, you know, trees coming down and those kinds of things. Came upon this happened to be another senior whose roof was leaking significantly because they were in the middle of having the roof replaced, and the high winds blew the tarp that had been put on their roof temporarily, blew it off. And so the firefighters actually went up on the roof and replaced the tarp so that you know, further damage wouldn't occur until they could have their new roof completed. Little things like that are going above and beyond, and we encourage that kind of thing. I mean, my guide to staff is simply treat others as you would hope to be treated if you were in a circumstance of need.
Absolutely, absolutely. And those are some great, great aspects of going above and beyond as well. I've also heard that firefighters, like when they're sitting and they're not responding to, when they're actually waiting for calls, they're actually going into the community, I've heard, and they're also going and asking kids to go and showing them how the engines and stuff work too. I've read a lot about that as well.
Absolutely. Our fire stations throughout the community are part of the community. We are part of the neighborhoods in which they, wherever they're located. And so staff are always open to visits by the community and the members of the community. And we not only encourage it, we go out of our way to make people feel that the fire station in their local neighborhood is there
Absolutely. Now can people like myself, like can I go to my local fire station in Kitchener, or let's say if I was living in Windsor, go and contact, let's say, yourself or someone and say, I would like to see your fire station?
Absolutely, that can be done, and I'm sure, I don't know all of the process in the city of Kitchener, but I'm sure it's not too different from what we do here. And if you want a formal tour of a fire station, you simply have to contact our administration, and we can arrange that at a convenient time for you and ourselves. But sometimes it's just a Saturday morning, and you're out for a walk, and you walk by the fire station, and you see the doors open and staff inside. You just walk up and say hello.
Exactly. Yes. I mean, yeah. I guess a lot of people are not actually aware that they can actually do that. It would be nice if more of that was out in the media. But I mean, it's great to know that at least one person like myself can actually walk up to a fire station and say, "I would like to have a look at your fire station and see all the engines and vehicles and stuff like that." I mean, that's great to get to our fire
station. Our staff accommodating, because ultimately that fire station is yours, not theirs.
Oh, it's ours. Absolutely, absolutely. Now, what has it been like since the two new fire stations have actually been built and the other two have been closed?
Well, they actually haven't been only one of the new stations, and there's actually three new stations. One has been built and is occupied and has been in service for all of last year. And the second one of the three is just about to get started. I believe the tenders are just being received from the various companies that are interested in building it for us. So that will be awarded very soon, and construction will be underway for the second. And we're hoping in the not too distant future, the third one that was planned to be built will also be underway. And likely the second and third stations will open very, very close together in 2017.
Absolutely. Now, the other question I did have was that where are these fire stations going to be located, the new ones?
The one that's completed and is occupied is actually located on Chandler Avenue. That's fire station number two, and that's a relocation of the former fire station and a consolidation. So station two and station six in the old world were both decommissioned and combined in this new station, and that's up and operating. Then station five presently is on Cabana Road, and it will be decommissioned and relocated to Northway and Daytona Avenue, and that's about to get underway. And the third station that's actually the completion of a 10-year-old project is our old airport location, and that station is being closed. It was originally opened as a temporary location, and a permanent station is being built on Provincial Road, and in combination with that station, a new emergency operations center is also being included in that project, and that's the one that's about to get started.
Absolutely, that's awesome to know. I mean, it's with these new fire stations being built, when it comes to response times, will those response times decrease in time, I should say, so they can get to places more quickly?
Our anticipation is that our response time will be enhanced or improved with the changes in location for these two stations. Certainly in the case of the airport location, it wasn't in the best location, but was a temporary facility. And so the permanent home is going to be very appropriately located, like I said, on Provincial Road, which is going to provide them not only better access to their existing response area, but as areas develop in an annexed area, basically east of the airport, this station is going to be able to service that new area much, much better than where it was previously located as well. And then again, the enhancement to that is the new Emergency Operations Center, which is going to provide us with a facility that will assist the municipality in managing major emergencies that this community is faced with from time to time, using the latest and greatest technology in order to do the very best at managing emergencies.
Well, I guess that's great to know, I have to say. Now, what are some major emergencies that actually happen in Windsor? I know that they have the Chrysler car plant, but I know since a lot of the auto industry has left Windsor, when it comes to the major emergencies, what are some of the most major emergencies that Windsor faces?
Well, we have had, much like most municipalities in Ontario, we've had from time to time significant events that have caused emergencies to be declared. For example, we had a major recycling facility fire a number of years ago that affected not only our city but our neighbors in terms of the toxins that were given off by the significant amount of plastics, etc., that were burning. So that was an event that challenged the city. Just like others, we've had major power outages, like in 2004, for example, that challenged our municipality. We have had, and we continue to have, severe weather events from time to time, including tornadoes or very, very high winds that have caused havoc, shall we say, within the municipality. We are prepared to deal with pandemic situations and other kinds of events that just challenge the enjoyment of life in a community.
I have to say, I have to say that I remember that there was a tornado once in Leamington. I was a high school student at the time.
Yep.
And I mean, I heard, did that also affect Windsor too? I think it was around 2000
and something. It didn't touch down in Windsor, but of course the very, very high winds that were associated with the tornado did have an impact. And so we get affected, by a variety of events, just like every other municipality. And so we want to enhance and fulfill our obligations to manage those emergencies as best we can when they occur.
Absolutely. Now when Leamington had the tornado that came down, did Windsor firefighters actually went to assist as well? Do you guys go and assist other municipalities?
To keep our responders in our community in situations like that, to make sure that we can provide our residents who pay for us with the most amount of assistance possible.
And how have the recruiting efforts been for Windsor? Because I know that you don't have a policy that you don't have a Made in Windsor hiring policy like the police have. So how easy has it actually been to find candidates in Windsor?
Fine. We've been undertaking our current recruitment process for many, many years now. We've had reasonable success in hiring the very best candidates, which is what we're after.
Absolutely. And when it comes to training, I've actually heard that you've also hired one of the first female fire captains by the name of Beth Laba.
She is the first female firefighter to achieve the rank of captain within the Windsor Fire Service. But Windsor also... If you go back many, many years ago, more than 20, we were actually the very first Ontario department to hire any woman firefighter. And so, we've tried to continue with an approach to diversity in our department so that we reflect that of our community. And so we endeavor to do that as best we can.
Absolutely, absolutely. Now, how many firefighters do you have that are female, and what is the percentage of firefighters that you have that are, what you say, visible minorities, and what are the percentage of firefighters that you have that have peoples with disabilities?
Yeah, unfortunately, I can't provide any hard statistics on that because we're not allowed to collect that information. So I can't tell you other than what I see.
Yes.
And I can tell you that regardless of our current numbers, I very much hope to expand those numbers in all categories, whether they be women, whether they be visible minorities, or whether they be the disabled. My goal is to enhance our current levels going forward.
Absolutely, absolutely. Now, I just wanted to ask as well that what can the community do as members of the community to ensure that all people are included. What can people do to make the world, make Windsor, or I should say the world, a more better place?
Well, I mean, the very best thing that I suppose the public could do to help us achieve our goals is people with disabilities, people who are visible minorities, and women need to apply. And that's often the challenge with many organizations, is they want to hire these individuals, and they want to assess them to see that they meet the minimum requirements. But if they don't apply, then we can't consider them for employment, of course. And so the very best thing they can do is apply.
Absolutely. And I mean, and what is the process like to become a firefighter? Like, what are the stages in the recruiting process?
Right. So we have a four-stage approach that starts with an application that must be received. And people need to meet our minimum requirements, which of course is, you know, 18 years of age. They must be a graduate of Ontario Secondary School or have an equivalency. Although we encourage much higher education levels than that, the minimum is grade 12. They must have a valid first aid and CPR certificate. They must have the ability before hiring to obtain a Class D driver's license, which is what's required to drive our vehicles. And, you know, and then anything else that they can provide us in terms of mechanical aptitude, knowledge of building construction, those kinds of things are all going to very much help themselves in terms of moving to the next stage, which is written examinations. There are two sets of tests that they write, and they must achieve a pass in all of those portions of the written to move on then to a physical assessment. Which is done to assess their physical capabilities relative to the job tasks that they would be required to do on the job. Having met all of those requirements, then candidates are selected for an interview, which is really about suitability.
Absolutely. And when it comes to the interview portion of that, is there also a lot of psychological testing and questions that are associated with the interview?
That's included in the written portion.
Yes.
But the interview is really about suitability and fit in the organization.
So it's mostly suitability and fit.
Right.
And let's say, for example, now when firefighters get hired on the job, and let's say if they have like post-traumatic stress after attending an event or something like that that has caused great sadness and depression from seeing, what kind of resources do you guys offer for your firefighters?
Well, we have an in-house program that's been ongoing for a long, long time. In fact, the city of Windsor, quite frankly, has been providing assistance to staff in the area of critical incident stress. And, you know, the vogue today, which is PTSD, and you have to understand that post-traumatic stress disorder is a very significant affliction that does not necessarily occur, you know, with a single event, although it can. It is the exception. Most often, critical incident stress is dealt with by a clinician-guided, peer-driven support process that provides staff with everything from life skills to developing coping skills to deal with specifics of individual events. And so this team, which is an in-house, like I say, peer-driven but clinician-guided program is provided to all staff and is available to all staff should they require assistance. In addition to that, we have clergy on staff, chaplains, who also provide support to our staff. And then, of course, we're part of a much larger, broader network of fire services across the country, in fact, that provide opportunities and support for staff when they're faced with these difficulties.
Absolutely, absolutely. Now, I've also heard as well, I know my colleague, she actually does a radio show called Blue Sky Horse Radio, and she told me about an organization called Can Praxis, where let's say it's an organization which has horses, but it helps people who are veterans and PTSD, like people who are suffering from PTSD. Have you ever, now do you guys have a lot of like the horse stables and stuff that you encourage your members to go and visit?
No, that isn't part of our current program.
Well, that's not part of your current program as well. Now, when it comes to your firefighters and stuff, whenever there is a traumatic event, what is the average turnaround time for each firefighter to go through that phase in terms of recovery?
It depends on each individual. You know, if we have a significant event, our support programs actually begin while staff are still on scene, and they're reminded of those things that they need to do to help themselves and to move towards normalization of the reactions they may be experiencing. You know, and it could be something as remember to eat properly, avoid alcohol, stay away from caffeine, keep your normal routine as best you can. You know, if they have a confidant, sharing that their own thoughts and feelings about the particular incident is encouraged. And then depending on the circumstances and the incident itself, we can move to more formal diffusings or debriefings. You know, it really depends on the reaction staff are having and what the incident involved, for example.
Exactly. And yes, definitely, for sure. I think what members of the community could also do is to help firefighters who are going through this as well, is maybe make some thank you cards or smiley faces or something. That could also help too, I think.
Sure. Well, again, it's all part of the normalization, right? Want to conduct everyday life as you normally would, and so you know, the sooner we can help staff and assist staff to normalize things, very often that's all that is necessary. And you know, we also have to remember that not to confuse stress reactions or one's inability to cope with memory. Lots of bad things happen in our lives, in our own private lives, or day-to-day in our work lives. Lots of bad things happen. That's our job. We're involved in tragedy. And so you're not going to forget those things. That's memory. That doesn't necessarily mean that you're having stress reactions or having an inability to cope. You will always remember those significant events. But because you remember them doesn't mean you're stressed out by them.
Absolutely. I once watched a documentary which was on Emergency 999, which is one of those shows that talks about emergency response. And I read that sometimes when it comes to incidences, is that let's say something happened a few years ago, it will just stay in the back of one's mind. And sometimes the thing is that I guess it's just how reacting to the stress is very important as well, because I mean, the one thing is that sometimes one can't change a situation, but one can try to change as to how they react to it.
Oh, absolutely. And you know, you need to look at the good that comes of tragedy sometimes. The best example I can use is school buses. You know, you have these great big vehicles that transport our little ones to and from school every single day. They're big, they're bright, they're yellow. There's legislation that says traffic should come to a full stop. You have flashing lights, you have stop signs and bars that swing out when the children are exiting and crossing the roadways. But don't think for one minute any of those safety features didn't occur as a result of nothing happening. Tragedies occur, which has caused those individual things to occur. So that's the good that comes of tragedy.
Is increased safety and like safety features and stuff as well.
Absolutely.
That's good to know. And any last words you wanted to say about any advice someone could have being a firefighter, or just any advice you may have as to someone that should handle stress, whether if they're working as a firefighter or working in the office or dealing with the public? What is the advice that you can give to ensure that people can try to be as happy as possible, but sometimes life throws curveballs?
Well, I guess what I would say to any responder is the reactions they are experiencing are normal. They're absolutely normal reactions by normal people to abnormal situations or events. And so recognizing that how they're feeling, how they're reacting to the things they see or do is normal.
Absolutely, absolutely. And Fire Chief Bruce Montron, I'm so happy to hear that you came on to my show today. Thank you very much for coming on. I know I talk quite a bit, and thank you so much for being patient with me. And it was a pleasure talking with you. I mean, now I can go around and tell people that, hey, I interviewed Fire Chief Bruce, and he is an awesome guy. So thank you very much. And I also just wanted to say that I just want to say hello to all of my friends and everyone I knew in Windsor as well. And I just wanted to say that I miss you guys.
Right. Well, you have a fire safe day.
And you have a fire safe day to you too. And cheers for now.
Thank you.
Bye bye.
Bye bye.
Hello there. Yes, so that was Fire Chief Bruce Montone, if I pronounced the name correctly, and it was an honor being able to speak with them today in regards to this particular fire safety incident. Fire safety messages, I should say, and it's been phenomenal speaking to him on the phone as well. And I just want to give a shout out to the people that made this happen. I want to thank Jill for her efforts in getting me an interview for this particular topic. And I also want to thank Ashley at the 311 call center in Windsor. And I also want to thank Mary Anna, the supervisor at the 311 call center as well, for putting in my compliment for Mary Anna. And also I want to thank Ashley for putting in my compliment to Jill as well. And I really, really do appreciate the work that the men and women do at the City of Windsor, but I also appreciate the work the citizens do in the City of Windsor to make their communities better, and also elsewhere around the world as well.